Yes, and welcome back to the home of good news, interesting anecdotes from history, and a few jokes in the way. I'm Callum, and this is That's News to Me. This week's been a great week for good news. We've seen a lot of feminist news and more environmental news, but before we get to that, we have to introduce the main man himself, my right-hand man. He's the driving force behind our good news, and he is weaving and chicaning through our stories. This week with us is driver Buster Lewis Hamilton Chater. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. I'm feeling a little bit guilty for having a glass of wine in my hand now after the driving analogy.
Jesus.
No seatbelt on either.
No, well, there's nowhere to go anyway, to be fair. So
we could just pretend it's the 50s and that was fine back then to drink drive without a seatbelt.
So before we get on with some good news, shall we have your first interesting story of the week?
Oh, Jesus Christ, yes, I'm ready.
Before we get started from our lovely story from Buster, just like to remind you, if you could, just give us a little like, give a little subscribe, and we'll all be a bit more happier. So, on to the stories.
And if you have already liked and subscribed, thank you from all three of us.
Oh yeah, we forgot. I'm
very pleased that you did that.
We should have just. Yeah. We should.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Good for you.
Yeah, thanks.
You won't regret it. I can't promise that, but we can try. Well, you might regret it, but you probably won't. Decent chance you won't if you liked it. This week, I wanted to tell you about the real life water world. Ooh. A few weeks ago, in fact, last year I think it was, we talked about the real West world. That's pretty good.
Oh yeah, it was pretty good.
So, yeah, that is pretty cool. So this one is another classic film. Is also based on a real thing. Well, not based on, but there's a real water world, right?
Are we saying that Atlantis is real right now?
Ooh, that's... Yes, yes we are.
I'm not.
And
no,
it's
I'm
called...
I'm not. You've already got me at this is bullshit. I'm already at that level. You've really got to like push me up. You've really got to like raise the bar a little bit here to try and get me in the believable column.
So you're probably picturing an ancient Greek island with sort of beautiful topless people walking around covered in oil and, you know, throwing things around.
And topless mermaids.
That's not... Yes, topless mermaids. Yeah, fish bottom half.
Exactly.
Oh no, topless fish top half, trousers on the bottom,
Adonis,
something like that.
Adonis, you know, all the kind of sea creatures,
yeah.
All those kind of people.
That's not really where we're going with this Atlantis.
Good.
This is more like a couple of miles off the coast of Felixstowe. There is an old World War II sea fort.
Sorry, where's Felixstowe?
It's at the very bottom of Suffolk. And it's sort of where this... all happened is like the Thames estuary and a bit further up the east coast, so like off the coast of Essex and Suffolk.
Okay.
And during the Second World War, the Brits built a load of sea forts out there to shoot down Luftwaffe bombers that were dropping sea mines, disrupting trade and stuff. So they had these towers that sort of looked like a... There was all sorts of designs, but they either looked like a sort of a cheap, shitty AT-AT covered in guns, or like a boat that was up on stilts high above the water. Smaller than an oil rig, but sort of big steel structures a bit out of the sea.
Right.
And there was a ton of these, and after the war, they were abandoned and decommissioned in the 50s. But one particular one, the one that we're interested here in the story, it was called Fort Ruffs. That was 13 kilometres, or 7 nautical miles, ahoy there, from the coast, which was at the time international waters. So the British Navy built it there, but it was unclaimed international waters or whatever. And the reason that they were abandoned was post-war, no one needed them. People forgot about them. But then, around about the same time, there was this massive sort of revolution in pirate radio. I don't know if you've ever seen that film, The Boat That Rocked, or heard anything about this, but there was pirate radio stations all over the country to kind of fill a need, in that the radio stations during the war were run for Americans who were based in the UK.
Right.
and the BBC after the war went back to just doing boring BBC stuff, just like old ladies playing church organs for hours and that sort of stuff.
I still love it. So, I still love it every Sunday.
There was a section of society that thought that was brilliant. I mean, you got to say, there was a couple of people, you know, we probably knew them, they may be great aunts of ours or anything like that, who would fucking love that. Just organ music for hours.
Oh, someone's against the licensing fee. Someone's against the licensing fee. Here we go. This is all a story about why licensing is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Defund the BBC.
Defund the BBC.
I'm sick of them doing top quality documentaries.
Yeah, giving me shit that I love all the time.
Well, the BBC, actually, to their credit, they did change with the times. So they were the kind of the reason for the pirate radio.
Songs of Praise is still on the TV, stuff, mate. Let's not say they fully changed with the times. Let's not fully go all the way.
True.
Yeah.
But they also have People Just Do Nothing, which is another great pirate radio TV show. That's Corrupt FM, set in Brentford. But the BBC eventually, all these pirate radio stations, they actually hired a lot of hosts from them, and it kind of became the norm for radio stations to be, you know, like we know now, Radio 1 with like chart shows.
Oh, so they were kind of like the Catch Me If You Can guy. He was just so good at being a fraudster. They're like, you need to come work for us instead of actually being in jail for your shit. You're actually really good, so instead of sending you to jail or fining you, we'll hire you.
Yeah, poachers turned gamekeeper. And this pirate radio stations, quite a few of them were on boats moored off or sailing around in international waters. So Fort Ruffs, that I mentioned before, this like oil rig AT-AT looking thing off the coast of Felixstowe, mm-hmm. was perfect for it. And there was quite a few people doing pirate radio in there until one of the big protagonists of this story, a retired army major called Paddy Roy Bates, or you might by Roy for some reason. It's back in the olden days when people had nicknames that make no apparent sense to the name, like Buster. And this guy went...
Those are people called Chips.
Yeah.
No.
Rusty.
Yeah. Sleuth.
Gonorrhea Jones.
We know where he got that one from.
Yeah. Johnny Two Hats. So this Roy Bates, he showed up at Fort Ruffs with his family, some of the associates, and some guns, and just took over like proper pirate style, not radio pirate style, but actual pirate style.
Captain
took
Blackbird
over
style.
This
Let's
Fort
get
Ruff.
In there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can assume that there was like people swinging from rigging and cannons and that sort of stuff, and shitloads of grog afterwards. But he took over this fort and was going to start his own pirate radio station there, but he wanted the place to himself. But he never got that far. So this was in 1967. He turned up there, and before he even got his stuff set up, he had all the kit, but he decided instead that actually, delusions of grandeur, he wanted to start his own nation. So he declared this structure out in international waters to be the Principality of Sealand, and declared it an independent nation, and no one really did anything. It was okay, it wasn't bothering anybody, it was fine.
It's allowed him to just declare his own land.
Yeah, he wasn't doing any harm, you know, it was international waters, you know, everything goes in international waters, and it's a bit, yeah. So it only became a problem 1 year later when some workmen came out to this old abandoned structure to repair an old buoy. Which is like B-U-O-Y, not a young person,
penis,
young man.
Yeah, with his penis not working.
Yeah. He was drowned. He'd been in the sea for 15 years. But
it was called Bobby.
They
just Bobby. Thank you.
So they went out to repair this buoy, and this Major Bates, his son, Michael, made a splash by firing warning shots at these workers to scare them away, claiming that they were in Sealand's territorial waters. Now, that will of course get you the attention that you don't really need as an independent nation, firing guns.
You're in international waters, like you don't own the waters. That's just not how life works. But to be fair, that is a lot of how we claimed a lot of land in America and in Bingo. Other places yeah. where it's... we just said, I'm like, our land now. Why? Because my flag's here. So.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's a British Army handbook on this.
Yeah. Flag is king.
I mean, he himself was a British citizen, so he was, you know, doing what I think came naturally, but the British didn't see the funny side of it. They considered this, despite it being international waters, you know, their turf. You know, it's just a few miles, nautical miles, off the coast. And, you know, Britain, we even have a song about ruling the waves. So this is like, this has rubbed them up the wrong way. So
flag is king, then song is
exactly,
king.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly.
There
so
was
that's
a
like,
lot of
that's
flag
why, that's why America just loved their flag and their songs about their nation, because if you love both of them, then you are the best type of person. How
yeah.
Shit is.
Yeah. Flag shackers. So the UK government summoned him to the mainland to court to press firearms charges. But the court ruled that the incident occurred in international waters, not territorial waters. So the case couldn't proceed. It was dismissed. And the judge said, this, I'll do a judge impression. This is
judge,
a swash. Order! This is a swashbuckling incident, perhaps more akin to the time of Sir Francis Drake. But it is my judgment that the UK courts have no jurisdiction.
A jurisdiction? Doff my cap, and tuck my forelock, and off my pop. Who wants a whiskey?
If you were Sealand, though, and the UK government basically said, look, I know you shot some folks, but hey, you're in international waters, baby. You would pretty much take that as... we're good to go. Sealand is a thing now. So what they did then, because they had basically had this kind of tacit recognition of their nation, they drafted a constitution, created a flag. Got to have a flag.
Got to have a flag.
What was the other thing you said you needed?
A song.
National anthem. They've got a song.
Did they have a sea shanty by any chance?
It's really generic to sort of like orchestral music, you know, bombastic orchestral music. It doesn't have any lyrics. I did look for ages to find it. I was so disappointed that it was that. But
that is really, really
they also, though, minted currency, printed stamps, have a post office on this thing. And this is small. This is like 20 metres by 40 metres. And they even had passports. So they issued passports to
how did they do all these things?
Sealand.
Did they take a printed press with them? What the hell are they doing?
One of the biggest unanswered questions about this whole thing for me, and I'm afraid I don't have an answer for you, is a lot of this frivolity must have been bankrolled by someone. This Major Bates guy, I assume. Where he got the money from, I'm not really sure. But he seems to have had enough of it to do, well, all of this nonsense.
Do you reckon he proper had a pirate voice as well?
I guess they probably started out as pirates, but they transitioned very quickly into something else. Because now they're an independent nation, the Principality of
Sealand.
Which is
the opposite. Yeah, it's the opposite of what a pirate
yeah,
is.
Yeah, exactly.
Pirate's
it's stability.
Supposed to be like a nomad, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. They've got the stability and dignity that comes with being now heads of state. So this guy, Major Bates, Roy, and his wife, Joan, they named themselves Prince Roy and Princess Joan of Sealand. And they had their son, Michael, the guy firing at the workers, starting that diplomatic incident. He would eventually become the Prince Regent of Sealand. So this then, there was a period of sort of a decade or so where they were regular, if not permanent, residents in Sealand, and the royal family were there, and discussions with a German businessman
our royal
their
family.
Sealand's royal family.
Right, I thought our royal family were going there. I was like, this
no, the Queen has never visited Sealand.
Right.
It's not officially recognised, actually, by the UK. It's all political. It's all political
it's
bullshit,
political.
Mate.
Yeah. Don't want to get into it.
But they said the royal family of Sealand, they had discussions with this German businessman called Alexander Achenbach, and they were in discussions with him about turning Sealand into a luxury hotel and casino, which, if you can imagine that, in international waters would have been fucking Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah.
It would have been chaos. But they had a disagreement about the terms and how it would work and stuff. So while the royal prince and princess were back visiting the UK mainland, this German businessman Achenbach hired some mercenaries and attacked Sealand, tried to, well, took it over, captured the young prince, Prince Michael.
All for a casino.
Took him hostage. It wasn't even a casino yet, mate. It's still a shitty at oil rig / ship on stilts thing.
Yeah.
In the sea. So he had control of it, and he declared himself to be the Prime Minister of Sealand.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. What do you reckon?
Democracy happened. Amazing.
It's a military coup. But what do you reckon the deposed Prince and Princess of Sealand did in response to this? Bear in mind that they were radio pirates.
Did they call on our government to help them out on attacking back Sealand or something?
There's a few burned bridges with the UK government.
The French government.
After the...
The Swedes. They got the Swedes involved.
Getting the French to come and help against the British government is actually a great suggestion, to be fair. They probably should have done that. But no, what they did instead was even madder. So they had a buddy who used to fly helicopters during the war, and then more recently, this was 1978 this happened, he was flying stunt helicopter stuff for the James Bond films. He was a stunt pilot for James Bond. They hired him, or got him, to take the doors off his helicopter and fly them out to Sealand, standing on the skids of this helicopter. This is Roy and his wife. They rappelled down into Sealand with guns, Molotov cocktails and stuff.
Just burnt the shit out of the fucking Sealand.
Yeah.
Burnt to the ground.
Back and back off the island. They didn't burn it to the ground, but they... And I don't think it was even any shots fired, but they managed to get the jump on them because they came in by helicopter pretty quickly, rappelling at dawn, like mad, from James Bond's
stunt
helicopter.
Sounds like the Expendables.
It's crazy. And then they captured the guy, this Achenbach guy, the businessman that had a business dispute with this dude, and he's now kidnapped by the royal family of Sealand.
Exactly. Yeah. Did they put him in the gallows?
They sent him to the brig.
Right.
Yeah, and he was ransomed back to Germany. They were asking for $35,000.
Did they get it?
From the German government. They eventually reached an agreement. I don't think they did.
At $35.
Yeah, maybe. But the German sent over an ambassador, which was another massive big deal for Sealand, because that's like, if you're sending ambassadors over, that's like, you know, diplomatic ties with a major European power. So Sealand took this to be a big, you know, ratification of what they were doing.
This is all in our parents' time. This is not too long ago. This is not too long before we were born, and I've never heard of this Sealand. So they created their own nation. Some German guy came over, was like, let's make loads of money. They were like, I'm not too sure. He's like, right, fuck you, I'm going to take you over. They were like, right, we're going military style. We're coming in here in a helicopter and, like, you know, propelling down. We took our place back. We got some money for this guy. What?
Restored the monarchy of Sealand.
Where is Sealand now? That's what I want to know. What's happened to Sealand?
So two interesting things happened next. Basically, this Achenbach guy, he was exiled when the monarchy was restored after the Glorious Revolution, whatever you'd like to call this microcosm of strange things happening. And he set up a rebel government in exile based out of Germany, which spent the next, like, 20 years trying to cause frustration and problems for Sealand. But they
so
weathered the storm.
He set up his own now island.
He set up a rival government in exile, a bit like General de Gaulle over here from France during the war, or like Chinese Taipei, a government in exile of China sort of thing. It's
Jesus.
Drama.
Yeah.
But the next thing that happened was a little bit of a blow for Sealand, in that the UK changed its definition of its territorial waters from 3 to 12 nautical miles. Sealand is only 7 away, so that put Sealand quite squarely into UK territorial waters. And also at some point in the 60s, after they first took over, they blew up all of the other forts that were around to stop anyone else trying this. But despite that, despite them not having official recognition or anything, they continue to this day. Sealand issues... I mentioned before, it issued passports back in 1997. they had to recall all of their passports because there were apparently 150,000 passports in circulation. So, like, pretty decent population. But apparently the passports were being traded as a part of an international money laundering ring. And
not a fucking surprise.
Yeah, they were being sold illegally, and fake ones been sold in Hong Kong, and money laundering from Russia and Iraq. It was a whole mess, and the ringleaders had ties to Achenbach, the prime minister in exile, who is operating out of Spain. It's mad, but that was sort of cleared up. And yeah, the reason I found this story out really is because recently the captain Sir Tom Moore passed away.
You're trying to move some of your assets out of the country.
Yeah, it's just diversifying.
Yeah. Go visit Sealand?
I think so. Yeah, the one show went to it a little while ago, and they made one of the presenters a Duke of Sealand. And how? You can actually go on their website. So if you go to sealandgov.org, so sealandgov, all one word, .org, they have their own website. You can buy football shirts. They've got a football team, despite not having enough people to have a football team. And this platform's not big enough to put a pitch on. So you can never play a home game.
They live there.
A couple of people live there, yeah. I think the grandkids, even now, of Prince Roy are there.
This is madness.
And apparently, one of the princesses, Prince Roy's granddaughter, was second place runner-up as Miss Southend recently.
Despite living offshore.
Well, it's British territorial waters now, so the UK doesn't recognise Sealand, but Sealand definitely recognises themselves. You go on their website, they take it really seriously. So you can buy flags and all sorts of shit.
So they are trying to be the Wales of England, basically, just on the other side of the country.
So many Welsh people are going to really hate you for that comment. Trying to be the Welsh of English. Why don't the Welsh just recognise how English they really are?
They are.
With your language and culture that predates Anglo-Saxon culture.
I am going to be a bit British here and just say that it isn't a proper country. It is a principality of England. So if you actually want to get really technical, Wales is not a country in of itself. Scotland is. So.
And they put an English prince in charge of it as well, just as a little fuck you to Wales.
Exactly. This is madness. I've never heard of Sealand, and they almost caused an international incident. That is brilliant.
So recently Captain Sir Tom Moore passed away, and he is a sir because he was knighted for his charity work. He raised a huge amount of money, millions and millions of pounds, walking around his garden before his 100th birthday raising money for the NHS. And Sealand also knighted him. I don't know if they did it before the Queen. They may have done. I assume it's easier for them since they just print him a certificate out rather than having to send him anyway.
Have you even been
there? No, he didn't. Just he didn't around now get claiming airlifted
humans.
On.
Just claiming humans now. Then. Oh, he was ours. Lewis Hamilton, he was ours. Just go around.
I guess that's what you can do if you're a principality. You can just knight people, boom, boom. Like in the same way that you and I, being Pastafarian ministers, can just baptise people, like, pow,
exactly.
Baptised.
Yeah, we just throw some pasta at people. You just get little bits of fusilli and just lob it at people's heads. You're suddenly a Pastafarian. Pastafarianism happens to you. You don't have to accept it. So, that is a very bizarre thing that I've never heard in my life. I can't believe that I've never heard of Sealand before. And they're just carrying
Neither
on.
Neither can I, honestly. Like, it's crazy.
Do you know why that we've never found pirate treasure? This is a good one.
Oh. Is it because the real pirate treasure was friendship?
No.
No.
What do you want me to tell you?
Is it because they were broke? They spent it all on rum and hookers.
Yes, exactly. That is literally
yes.
It. Like that's the thing.
Classic pirates.
But they were the pirates weren't there to have a long life and get out of the game at one point in time. They were there to rob people and just fuck everything and just get really drunk all the time and just not give a shit.
That's
and they just
makes sense.
And they just went around spending it. That's all they did. And if they were running out of money, guess what they did? Looted another boat.
Bit of pirating.
Exactly, bit of pirating.
They'd go to a cinema with a camera and get the latest Avengers movie.
So the idea that pirates were going around and trying to hide things on desert islands and, trying to hide their loot was just stupid. And they had a big boat as well, with loads of guns. What a better play. Why would they try and chuck something in a random place where someone could discover when they can keep it themselves and just kill people because they can they can look after it themselves? It just didn't really make sense. But yeah, that all came from obviously Treasure Island back in the day, the original. But cool. Well, I am definitely up for a trip to Sealand as soon as the pandemic has finished. Is everyone else?
Yes.
Brilliant.
We could do a pirate podcast broadcast from Sealand.
Amazing. Should we get on with some good news?
I'd bloody love to hear some good news.
Would you? Well, we're just about to do it now. First bit of good news is that the path has been cleared for Nigeria's Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala to become the first woman and first African to lead the World Trade Organization. The fact that they're hiring a woman, and not only a woman, but from an African country as well, is a massive step forward for more diversity in the world.
Groundbreaking. It's good for African nations to have more of a say in international trade, so that there's a less like neo-colonial kleptocracy going on.
Yeah.
So I've got a good bit of marine news. I thought I'd kick us off with something from the sea because I love that shit.
Yeah.
So back in 1991 in California, they banned this type of fishing net called gill net because it was it had a lot of bycatch. So you put nets in the water. It's designed to, supposed to catch one particular fish. These gill nets caught all sorts of stuff, even things that they didn't want to catch. You only wanted them to catch things on porpoise, which leads me into the porpoise population in California, because of this ban, has boomed. It's now recovered back to really healthy levels, and as well, like, it's a sign that the ecosystem has recovered to a degree. So it's a great news story for, although it's quite a long time, seemingly, from 1991. To now, that is a huge amount of time for these animals to recover, but their gestation and reproductive cycles are quite long. But it shows that with the right legislation, the environment can, if we try hard enough, recover.
Yeah, I liked your poor pause before you went into that part, because you were poor poised to talk about it. Ta-da! Indonesia has banned mandatory religious attire in state schools. So I don't know if you knew this.
Is that manatee religious attire?
A mandatory.
Sick bastards making manatees wear religious attire.
Hey, look, if there's going to be more dolphins in the world, there's got to be also more manatees.
Manatee in a turban or a yarmulke or something like that, or a little crucifix necklace. Or a little bracelet that says WWJD on it.
So, no is your answer to all of those things. Is essentially every child had to wear some kind of religious attire, which was basically Muslim based. So, i.e., the women with wearing the hijab, for example. And now they don't have to. So, and there's a massive campaigning to try and stop people that didn't believe in that religion to not have to wear mandatory clothing like that. So, it's a good thing. Is this kind of stuff is like, you know, as I think we've discussed before, you can wear something like that, but don't force other people to wear it if they don't want to. That's your whole freedom of choice, really, to wear what you'd like to.
Yeah, it's excellent. Yeah, I think it helps respecting people's differences and not forcing your ideology on people. It's definitely the way forward.
100%.
Good news from France, although not good news for the French government. They've been found guilty of climate inaction. So a court in Paris has ruled that the French government is guilty in this groundbreaking case. There's a group of NGOs, basically with huge support from citizens from all over the world, but mostly in France, They filed a lawsuit against the French government for not doing enough to meet the country's own commitments to limiting greenhouse gases.
Amazing.
It's been hailed as the case of the century. We are, to be fair, only 21 years into the century, so you know the list isn't
not
as long,
long
as it could be, but yeah. But it's great news, and this has happened in the UK as well. There's been successful challenges on the UK government's weak response to its own climate commitments. So it's great, and kick up the butt for the French government to do more.
That's great that France are being held accountable for.
Yeah,
the probably the biggest thing that we really need to be looking after right now is which is the environment.
Hells yeah!
Hells to the yes. The door has opened, Pope Francis has acclaimed, where now he's appointed the first woman to a senior synod post. And basically...
Synod, I think.
Synod. Mm. You know, tomato, potato, you know, all
Pope
that kind of
il
thing.
Papa.
Yeah. Basically, this is a very high up position within the Catholic Church, and the fact that they are starting to recognise women as useful... in any kind of sense, is actually a very, very good thing. We spoke a couple of weeks ago about how they now check balls to make sure that the Pope isn't actually a woman, and that was because of Pope John or Joan. And if you want to go back and have a little listen, then I would do. It's a very, very good one. And this is a very progressive step, and this Pope so far has shown how progressive he is by allowing women into his basically his cabinet of people. Why this is actually really important is that actually this position actually has a voting right, and so to make a vote as a woman, this would be pretty much the first time ever. So this is a pretty huge step, especially in the Catholic Church.
It's only taken Von I 2,000 years for the church to listen to the voices of literally half the people on the planet.
And what, 300?
Good work, guys.
And 300 and something popes or whatever? I don't know what number they're at now.
It is undoubtedly very good news, but also, get it together, church, man, come on. Great bit of good news for you from Denmark. So the Danish government, they're lovely, lovely bunch of people. One of them, it's been repeatedly voted the happiest place in the world to live. So what Denmark have done that's really great is the Danish government have agreed to take a majority stake in this huge, huge offshore wind project. So they're building a huge energy hub. It's like a massive floating island that's going to be the sort of jumping off point and energy transfer centre for a huge offshore wind farm. It's going to cost £50 billion to build, and the Danish government are taking just over half of that, 51%. So the really great parts of this are, aside from the fact that it's lots of green energy, can in the first phase alone it can power 3 million households, but it's also that it was a cross-party arrangement, so different across the aisle, or cross-party as you would call it, political spectrum has got together to fund this. It shows that there is great commitment in that country to addressing the energy crisis and climate change. And it's also going to, I mean, when government funds technology, science and research, you generally get a return within a decade or so of three times your investment. So it's rarely money poorly spent when you invest in science and technology. It's great.
Kenya records zero rhino deaths from poaching in 2020 for the first time in 20 years. So obviously, like, poaching is absolutely huge, and the reasons for poaching are the most disgusting and unrealistic and unscientific reasons, and also on top of that, just people wanting to glorify something that they've not actually killed themselves and used to trophy hunt. It's an appalling practice when really all they want is the horn for either medical reasons or whatever. It's just basically your nails. That's all rhino
keratin
is.
Yeah.
And so
it's flipping nonsense is what it is. It's also like so cruel, isn't it, to boil a rhino?
Yeah.
That's a poaching joke for the just for the people.
You don't boil when you're poaching. It just has to be quite warm. It won't be right.
Rhino.
You've got to make sure that it's like, there should be no bubbles when you're poaching.
A rhino, yeah, that's true. And you've got to stir the rhino as well so that it doesn't split up as you're poaching it. We shouldn't be giving people poaching tips. Kenya has recorded zero poaching incidents. We want to keep it that way. If you're listening and you're thinking about poaching a rhino, stop it.
Can you imagine
right
how
now.
Big that bowl would have to be, or that saucer? You have to be huge. Jesus.
I'm imagining that in too much detail. I don't think I want to.
Yeah, there'd have to be like 6 or 7 people with spoons just pushing it in one direction. All around the bowl, all around the saucer.
Someone pushed in one direction as well.
Like, imagine if someone,
Christ,
yeah.
Poached Harry Styles.
And then my last bit of good news for you, Buster, this week is Virginia is all but certain to become the first state of the old Confederate South, so that's like 16 states, to get rid of the death penalty, which has been in practice since 1608. The vote in the Democratic-controlled House won by about 57 votes to 41, so an amazing, amazing achievement. As we know, pretty much every single reason for the want to have the death penalty is just not true. It doesn't stop people from killing people. It isn't a deterrent whatsoever. And also on top of that, people that are in jail and also got the death penalty, there is always a percentage of people that didn't actually do the crime. Even as certain you could be for a very, very long time, we have proven time and time
again. Even if they'd smelt it?
They didn't dealt it. It didn't dealt
oh,
it
wow.
sometimes. It's just not how it goes. And
you gotta be careful, man.
And it just is true. Like, you can't... They can't then put up a defence if you kill them. So there's no credible evidence to say that the death penalty... capital punishment ever works. But also on top of that, I just think it's completely hypocritical. Oh, we're killing you because you killed someone. Well, then shouldn't you be put in jail? Yeah, but our killing is good killing. Your killing is bad killing. We're killing for good things. So.
It's barbaric and uncivilized, and it's definitely not something that we should see in any sort of developed or civilized nation in the world. So it's a great step forward.
Yeah, and hopefully.
What was the point in that?
And hopefully, other southern states follow in their footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll keep you up to date with that.
We're looking
because
at you,
it's,
Alabama.
Because it's passed in the House. So we've still got the kind of, you know, the state Senate to go. And then it will be passed and put into their law. And as we know now, recently, is that all the different states have their own constitutions as well and all their state laws. Very, very weird. But we'll keep you up to date as soon as possible.
Excellent. So for my final story, I've got another batshit technology story. I just want you to sort of savour this headline because it's so insane. Scientists have taught spinach to send emails. And it could warn us about climate change.
I love a bit of spinach. Love a bit of spinach. If you just add spinach to any meal, it's just like...
Very good for you.
It puts up the healthiness. So like risotto, spinach, healthier. You know, it with a steak, healthier. It with a cookie, healthier. It just makes the meal, whatever you're having, healthier. Love it.
Nice beer. Chuck a bit of spinach in there.
Exactly. Spinach beer while sending emails. Craziness.
Ooh. Stick that in the Nutribullet. Beautiful. So the headline aside is a bit bananas, but basically what has gone on here, some engineers at MIT, Massachusetts, have transformed the roots of a spinach plant to contain these nanomaterials. So this nanotechnology, these small materials which can detect a material in the ground. In this particular experiment, they use something which is often found in explosives, so they can detect explosive material in the soil. And that sends off a signal. So the interaction between the chemical and this nano molecule in the roots sends off a signal that can be detected by an infrared camera. So the reason that this is a good news story is it's...
This should be one of your anecdotes, mate. This is bonkers.
The application of it.
How many times?
Like,
how many
like
times?
A lot of science research.
How many times they've been sitting there? They just like, you know, put in... They planted loads of spinach. It's growing and suddenly... like the spinach... The field starts blowing up. And they're like, if only I had an email to know if there's explosives in there. You know what? I'll get the spinach to do it.
I mean... if you do your own research online like I do, reading QAnon stuff, then you know that actually there's been quite a lot of spontaneous cabbage and spinach fields blown up. But
yeah,
this definitely seems like one of the stories that's going to get nominated for an Ig Nobel Award. You know, the science awards that go to the insane science research that just sounds kind of, it seems pointless on the face of it, but has some deeper meaning. And the deeper meaning in this one is that it's groundbreaking nanotechnology. It's taken a tiny interaction, chemical interaction in the soil, and it transfers it to a detectable at a distance signal, so sending infrared from plants to the wider world. So with the right technology, nanotechnology, you could set up any plant potentially to pick up any particular chemical. So there is some really great breakthroughs here. Just the application of it and the headline are fucking bonkers.
Fucking amazing.
I mean, spinach sending emails doesn't really get to the core of this story, but that is basically what is happening here.
One small step for science and one small step for spinaches emailing us and telling us how they're feeling. Brilliant. Cool. Well, that's your good news for this week. I hope you've ate it up just like your spinach and getting all really strong like Popeye. And what we'll do is we'll get on with the last story of the day. Buster, are you ready for it?
Right, so this is a story about a man, because it's just one of those interesting lives that we've...
Brilliant! I'm so enticed. Ooh, you got me there with the headline. The story is about a man that's lived. Ooh.
Okay, maybe I'll big it up slightly. An interesting man who lived. And the headline I'm giving the story is Timothy Dexter, that's his name. Timothy Dexter, making America great the first time around.
Ooh.
This is an early American guy. He's born in Malden, Massachusetts, 1747.
Massachusetts?
A man of very poor means.
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. 1747, so that's before the American Revolution, Declaration of Independence, and that sort of thing. He dropped out of school very early to become a farmhand at 8. But his aspirations were to become rich and famous. So if you're not all that smart and you want a bit of cash, gold digging is where it's at. So he marries this old, rich, widowed lady called Elizabeth Frothingham, which
it sounds like
I hope isn't like nominative determinism. Why do they call her that? Listen. Well, she married him and gave him a fortune, you know, to say, or at least means. So now that he's sort of made it, he's, you know, got her. A wife and some money, he decides his aspirations, his career aspirations, lie in government. By now, the US is sort of starting to talk about revolution and governing itself, so he decides he wants to be involved in this.
How old is he at this point, sorry? He ain't like 9, is he?
No, he's in his 20s here.
So what, so this is taking him up to 1767-ish time, 70, so yeah, sorry, so about 10 years away from Declaration of Independence and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's fomenting. It's all going on. It's an exciting. It's like the first act of Hamilton. That's where we are, basically.
Yeah.
Fucking great musical, by the way. If anyone hasn't seen that, get on Disney Plus and watch that.
Don't go watch it live first. Seriously, I watched it on the screen.
But you can't do that now, unless you're listening to this after the pandemic.
Yeah.
Or before the pandemic, and you had a time machine. But this guy, he petitions. So rather than like running for office like a lot of people do, or, you know, being a millionaire sex offender, he decides that the way he's going to get into public office is to just write loads of letters, just pester them. Give us a job, give us a job. So eventually they just straight up make up a job for him.
Wow.
They make up a job called Informer of Deer.
What?
Which is...
So hang on. Are they informing old deers? Are they informing like deers with antlers, or is he in
deers with antlers?
Is he informing like how expensive shit is?
No, informer like secret police.
Right. And so he had to go act as like a deer and walk around with antlers on his head, being like, "Oh, that deer over there has been a bit suspicious."
Probably. I mean, it's a classic made-up job. There was probably quite a bit of busy work. And also, there were no deer in Malden, Massachusetts, really, to speak of. It's a town. So it was definitely like, he's the div kid. And they're like, give him a job. Call him the informer of deer or something. So now he's like plumped up. He's got his wife. He's got his cash. And he's like, I'm a big guy now. I'm an informer of deer of Malden, Massachusetts. So around about this time, we just discussed like that the Continental Congress was being formed, Declaration of Independence is being written and stuff. And before the Revolutionary War, the American sort of proto-government, the Constitutional Congress, created this their own currency called dollars, the Continental Dollar. But then after the Revolutionary War, this money is like so worthless because of a combination of, well, the US is now independent and struggling with inflation. They printed loads of it for some stupid reason, and they paid the soldiers in it. So there's tons of it in circulation, and that was worthless. So because a lot of the soldiers had been paid in it, there was kind of a movement to buy it back from the soldiers for like, you know, fractions of a cent. It was pretty much worthless. It wasn't worth the paper it was printed on, really. A bit like, you know, the Reichsmark in 30s Germany. Now, Tim, our protagonist, he, feeling pretty good about himself, is thinking, I'm going to buy these. This is a great investment. And he bought shitloads of them. Boxes and boxes, boatloads of them. And they were worthless. And while he was buying them, it became even more worthless. So, he is not a smart guy. He's got a bit of money. What do you think's happening here? He's bought a shitload of this stuff, and it's game over, right?
Is he just rolling around in it and throwing the air like, I'm rich. I'm not really, but I am.
Well, one of the traits about this guy, and the reason why I wanted to talk about him, is because he has a really irritatingly good look. So he's someone must be looking down on him and just thinking like, you know, whatever stupid thing he does, I'm in. So as a total fluke, twist of fate, the federal government decided to offer these Continental dollars in exchange for bonds, government bonds. And at a real like small price, they were worth very little individually, but because Timothy had like huge stockpiles, millions of them, he ended up suddenly, overnight, by turning these in for treasury bonds, became one of the richest people in his town. Like,
wow.
wildly rich. So, you know what like someone who wins the lottery will do immediately? Ball a house. Massive parties. That's exactly what he did.
Cocaine.
He has
hookers.
Like, Playboy mansion style. Yeah, blackjack. Yeah.
Drinking a cake upside down whilst being fisted. That kind of
shit.
Yeah,
an oak barrels of mead.
Yeah.
He also commissioned 40 statues of America's greatest heroes. And this is another window into this guy's personality. One of those statues was of him.
Of course.
He considered himself to be one of 40 of America's greatest heroes. And the plaque on the bottom of this statue of himself, this tribute to his own ego, said, the greatest philosopher in the Western world.
That is a big fucking statement.
It's a big fucking claim.
Aristotle,
and I would like to,
is from the West.
My thesis is that he is not, and is actually one of the biggest weapons, one of the heftiest bell ends in the Western world.
But he also made it work for himself, so do you know what I mean?
He ended up being
very fucking rich, even though he's a twat. He isn't necessarily, even though he might be claimed to be a fucking moron, he worked with what he got, and he did it. In a bad way, but he did it.
He even hired himself a poet laureate.
If he's such a fucking good philosopher, why didn't he just poet himself all the way up to laureate?
Rich people delegate, they don't do.
Yeah.
Callum. He hired a local fishmonger / pornographer. Seriously.
What? How did he treat someone
to be
that
his poet?
Same job. That's such
that
a
CV.
What a slash!
Timothy's poet laureate, pornographer, and fishmonger.
Have you ever heard of a slashy? A slashy is someone that has like multiple different jobs. So they're like, you know, the waiter slash bar owner, blah, blah, blah. What a slashy that person is. Fishmonger by day, pornographer by night. Ah, that's just some fishy business.
Every second Wednesday.
That's some fishy business right there.
Very fishy.
Very fishy.
So this, there was a lot of envy going around. You know, Timothy Dexter has come from very modest means, so the local aristocracy don't really want to see this ragamuffin who married into wealth and then just lucked out with this one, you know, really dumb luck investment. They didn't like that, and especially because he was having all these lavish parties and, you know, people were jealous. So the local aristocracy started giving him shit stock tips to try and get him to bankrupt himself, because he was so credulous and also so sure of himself. He considered himself to be a really great authority on all sorts of topics.
Oh, I know exactly and the kind of people you mean, like Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop there.
You know, they would say like,
I don't think that's the
yeah, person. You know what we're dealing with here.
Yeah,
a lot of people don't know nuclear like I do, that sort of shit.
Yeah.
And so one of the bits of advice they gave to him was to sell warming pans to the Caribbean. So if you're not familiar with a warming pan, it's a brass circular or sort of hockey puck shaped dish, like a pan, the lid, you put hot coals in there, and this lid had a long wooden handle attached to it that you would slide in between the bed sheets and the mattress, and it would warm up the bed for you without setting fire to the bed. And so he was advised to sell these bed warming pans to the famously tropical and warm Caribbean islands. That was his hot stock tip from the envious local aristocracy.
They're really warm.
So
place.
Being the sort of guy, exactly, he's not going to need bed pans. So he's the guy he is. He buys 40,000 bedpans, which, by the way, is an insane number of bedpans anyway, even for a cold place.
To really go into it, like, he didn't even check the scene. Buy 300, buy 400, see how it goes. He's like, full in, I'm going all the way.
You know the saying, Callum, fools rush in. Timothy Dexter is a fool.
Didn't know
he jumps both feet in.
Didn't know the saying.
Spends.
Didn't know the same, but we'll carry on.
As you know, fools rush in where angels fear to tread, you know.
Well, then I'm a fool.
Look before you leap and stuff.
I rush everywhere. I'm mental.
It doesn't mean just being in a hurry, but it does mean buying 40,000 bedpans and sending them to the Caribbean with your entire accumulated wealth.
Yeah.
But he sends all these bedpans over, and another case of dumb fucking luck. The Caribbean is a place where a lot of molasses, which is a byproduct of sugarcane, is processed. And it turns out that people, not understanding what bed warmers were because they were so pointless, they thought they would be really useful stirring molasses like a giant spoon. So he managed to sell all 40,000 of these fucking bed pans. He made even more money.
Wow.
So now he's a sort of, you know, dickhead who's put his own statue up in his garden. He's cock-a-hoop. So the local aristocracy up the ante slightly. They then tell you what you need to do, wink wink, you need to take coal to Newcastle, a famously pointless thing to do, with Newcastle being surrounded by coal mines and a huge exporting port of coal. Yep. So he's taken coal from America Newcastle, and they're like, this is definitely going to bankrupt them. It is the archetypal, it's a chocolate teapot idea. We've got them this time.
But was he able to sell it cheaper or something like that, and it just flooded
Literally the moment his shipment of coal arrived in Newcastle, there was a massive mining strike and a sudden, very brief need for coal. He sold it at a massive markup.
Wow.
And was even more fabulously wealthy. So this is an interesting part of the story, I think, because he's already sold coal to Newcastle and bed warming pans to the tropical Caribbean. It's possible that potentially, like, he's an actual genius, because he had some other side ventures that were wildly popular. He managed to herd cats, and then sent those to the Caribbean. and they were turned out to be really popular. He got them for free because he rounded up cats. I don't know what he was thinking, but they were really popular because there was rats from ships that had were causing problems in the plantations.
Wow.
So he sold cats there. He then also, for whatever reason, bought whale bones in Boston, bought loads of whale bones from the whaling industry, which were pretty low in value because there was massive whaling industry and they were kind of a surplus product. But then a fashion change in Paris meant that men started wearing corsets and the demand internationally for whale bones suddenly went up.
It's men like men were wearing corsets.
Prescience.
What?
Yeah, well, William Shatner used to wear a corset and a wig. And Timothy Baxter, he was just like, he must have, well, I don't think he really saw the stuff. I honestly think he's just a lucky idiot.
Wherever he stood, just gold flew at him. Like, he basically one day was like, I'm going to go out digging, and he dug, and he just found oil. He sounds like a more wealthy version of me, because I always get myself into shit, but end up always getting myself out of it. One time I had no money left for the rest of the month, and I was so poor, and I didn't know what to do with myself. I spent all my money on my ex-girlfriend, and I didn't really know what to do. I was coming back home from Liverpool, and I just looked in my bag, and at the bottom of my bag was an old scratch card that I hadn't seen in very long time. I don't know how long it had been there. I picked it out, and I won 500 quid.
God damn it. That's amazing.
I was like, brilliant. That sorted me out for the rest of the month. Then I didn't need to go to my mum and borrow some money. Had money.
That is precisely the sort of stuff that would have happened to this guy,
yeah,
Tim.
Yeah.
So he either didn't share your intellectual capacity, and that's being kind.
That is
to
really
Tim.
Kind, because that means he's a real dumbass.
He's a fucking idiot, yeah. So he was once walking along and saw a guy inscribing a plaque on a statue of Thomas Jefferson, one of the founding fathers. And on this plaque it was saying Thomas Jefferson was one of the co-authors of the Bill of Rights. And this guy comes over, Tim, and he's like, hey man, that's not right. Thomas Jefferson didn't write that. He wrote the Constitution. And which is not right. I mean, nowadays, from a historical vantage point, you could be forgiven for making that mistake because Thomas Jefferson is one of those names associated with the founding fathers. And so instead of just being like, no, the guy who's literally scratching this into stone may know, he's like, no, you're wrong. And the guy refused to listen to him and change it and didn't care that this guy was the informer of deer. So Tim got out a fucking rifle and just started shooting in the general direction of this guy to get him to change this sign so that it would say the Constitution rather than, the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. So he is a bit of a dummy. He had kids. The apple fell very close to the tree. They were described by the New England Historical Society as being a half-mad drunk and a completely mad drunk. His wife, the good Lady Frothingham, he couldn't stand her. He felt like he'd outgrown her, I guess, with his huge intellectual capacity and his vast wealth from his own savvy investments.
And his non-Frothingham over here, just normal,
yeah, exactly,
good tasting yeah. ham.
His insoluble ham. That's a good band name.
His dry ham. Nice bit of dry cured ham.
He used to tell guests who visited his house that he wasn't married and that there was a ghost in the house. the frequent apparition of this woman could come in and complain for being treated like a dick in her own house. Yeah. He was like, oh, it's just a ghost.
In 1700s, I actually think
maritime ghost.
That could pass. That could pass in 1700s.
That would fly back then.
Exactly, easy.
Then this is my favourite thing. This is the an act of ego that surpasses even the statue of the greatest philosopher in the Western world. He faked his own death in order so that he could organise a funeral. 3,000 people turned up, I'm assuming a lot of them just to check he was dead. Get this, he was hiding in a bush watching his own fake funeral.
Ta-da!
Even worse than that, he noticed his wife wasn't appropriately sad and wasn't crying, so he jumped out of this hedge and started hitting her with a cane. walking stick. In front of everybody. There's 3,000 people at this fucking funeral. How confused would you be? Wait, is that that fucking arsehole from... Oh my god, he's not dead. Jesus Christ. And he's just hitting that ghost. He's finally lost it.
Oh my god.
And to think he used to be one of the greatest philosophers in the Western world, and now look at him.
Is he... Oh my god. That's all...
This... You're picturing him jumping out of the hedge again.
Oh my god. Oh my god, my cheeks are hurting. Oh, I can't believe that.
So
that guy, oh my god. 2,999 people were sad. The one person he did not give a fucking shit about was Sam.
And he didn't. He hated his wife. I don't know why he was that arse.
He brutally beat the shit out of her, confirming that she wasn't a ghost because she was firmly feeling the end of that one.
And she, by the way, would be a pretty old lady at this point as well. She's just twatting like a 70-year-old lady a walking stick.
Oh my god, that is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. Oh my god, that was brilliant. Oh, lovely.
The final sort of chapter, he eventually started to get quite old and realised that the world needed a memoir of him, his great mind and his interesting life. So he wrote a memoir that he titled A Pickle for the Knowing Ones.
That means something.
What the fuck that means.
Yeah, that means something.
It was a short book, 20 pages of completely deranged, maniacal ranting about politics, religion, how much he hated his wife, whatever else, settling past scores, and the whole thing.
Past 28 pages, he got into a little bit of a pickle, didn't he? So,
this is another thing about him. He was practically illiterate, so this book had no punctuation in it whatsoever. So it's one giant sentence of
nonsense. More like me every single time that you discuss. I'm just not rich. That's all it is.
I've got some great examples of his amazing spelling in this book that I think you'll quite enjoy. So this word here, I'll spell out to you. What do you think he was getting
Seriously,
at?
Seriously, are you going to do this to a dyslexic? You're going to do this to a dyslexic? Is this where we're going with this podcast? You're reading out something to a dyslexic. Odin, can you write them in the chat as we go along?
I'll write it down as well.
We'll get Odin to do it whilst you go on.
Right, so it is F E L O S F E R.
Philosopher.
Philosopher, yeah.
It was only because I saw it.
And this last one is J-N-R-E-L.
J-N-R-E. Is this a time of typewriters, or is he just writing?
He's with a quill. With a quill and parchment.
General?
Very close, it's general.
General.
The military rank, general.
Oh, I thought he was like, in this journal.
So you can imagine, though, that looking at those garbage words, what a fucking slog it would be to get through this book.
And the thing is, the journal, like, he probably didn't mention that much, but the philosopher, he must have had at least a good 2 pages on how he's a good philosopher.
Yeah.
So that would have been properly...
It came up a bit.
He would have constantly kept on, you know...
This philosopher and general were actually both in the first line of this book. It's mad. And he had obviously a lot of criticism for the publishing of this book, particularly people taking issue with the fact it had zero punctuation in it. So he published a second edition. What do you think his response was to that criticism? Bearing in mind that he's an idiot and something of a dickhead.
Was it a 2 fingers up? What was he doing?
Pretty much. Yeah. He included an extra page at the end of the book, which contained nothing but punctuation, full stops, commas, exclamation marks, and that.
Funny
so that he fulfilled his objective. It has punctuation in, and it had a note above it saying, "For those who complained about the first edition having no grammar, feel free to use these wherever you see fit in the book. Insert them yourself, cut them out and stick them in."
I fucking love that. I love that. I'm in.
What an arsehole move.
I've gone from hating him to loving him just on that one page. I've gone from thinking he was a massive twat to going, that is exactly how I would get at my critics, just by doing that kind of shit. It'd be brilliant.
To quote Dumb and Dumber, "Just when I thought you couldn't be any dumber, you go and do something like this and totally redeem yourself." Guy's a hero, except for all the horrible, stupid stuff he's done.
Oh, but yeah,
he became like a... He then died. He's sort of memorialised and commemorated. His house accidentally burnt down when someone been doing something stupid, trying to take paint off with a fire. But it was rebuilt
like
by the New England Preservation System. Yeah, it was a good way to honour his memory, actually. It was a classic, stupid thing to do. Although, if he'd have done it, the house would have burned down, revealing some treasure underneath in the foundation.
Yeah.
So obviously, that's how it would have happened. But it was described years after his death as, "Though ignorant and illiterate, and doubtless somewhat indebted to luck for his good fortune, still it's evident the man was both shrewd and sagacious," which I think is overly kind. I think I focus more on the ignorant and illiterate part.
Wow, they got all the words in luck. There that he was. So they did.
He maybe had something in his will asking someone to say that.
I'm glad Odin did just send me the word sagacious on our chat, because he knew that I wouldn't have a fucking clue what that meant. Yeah, I was sitting there going, yeah, exactly, sagacious.
He is very sagacious.
But so wise. Okay, no, he doesn't sound very wise.
It doesn't
to me.
Fit, does it?
He does sound very shrewd. He sounds very like, you know, he's reading Reddit, he's getting what's going on. He's trying to, you know, understanding the world trends and hopping on them, you know? Do you reckon...
He's a sagacious motherfucker.
Yeah. But that got me. That did. That proper got me. That was... That was one of the funniest things I've ever heard. Like, oh my god, 3,000 people. That isn't even like... It wasn't even like a family gathering.
Yeah.
There was 3,000 people.
It's not a family do, no. Could you imagine being like alive at the time and hearing about this, asking like a neighbour, "Oh, did you go to Timothy Dexter's funeral?" "Oh yeah, it was a lovely spread." Weird thing though, he wasn't actually dead. He jumped out of a hedgerow and started beating the shit out of his elderly wife with a walking stick. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite weird actually.
But the entertainment actually was quite good later on in the evening. The music was really, really good.
So they kept the speeches short. It was nice, sort of like a pleasant wake sort of an atmosphere. Everyone was quite cheerful because he wasn't dead actually, so everyone was kind of fine.
It was, you know what? The whole thing really reminded me of him. He would have loved it, and actually, he told me
he
so.
He would have loved it. It's a real tribute to him. Fucking insane, lavish, and idiotic.
Oh,
but sagacious.
That is all we have time for today on That's News to Me. If you can, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Send it on to anyone that you feel that would love this podcast, whether they are alive or dead or pretending to be dead and going around and beating their families with canes afterwards. But Buster, please give us a little run through quickly of what actually we learned today.
So today we learned about an independent nation that's been sitting under our noses off our own shores, the Principality of Sealand, which has survived deposition attempts and international money laundering rings to become the successful online shop that it is today. We also learned about America's greatest philosophical mind, the wise and sagacious, lucky idiot, Timothy Dexter, who had probably one of the most interesting funerals. Because he wasn't dead.
Yeah. And, I still can't just get over that. The fact that he thought that he would... Can he not just wait to beat her with a cane? Like, how infuriated was this man just to just jump
He must
out?
Have been boiling over with rage,
to not wait until they got home and be like, why didn't you cry as much as I thought you would?
And what would he have been saying? Yeah, he would have been jumping out and going like, you should be crying, you should be sad because I'm dead. Like, what the fuck?
Well, anyway, we don't need to...
The more you think about it, the less it makes sense.
No. And we don't need to worry about it anymore, because guess what? We're on to next week already. So,
yep.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and from me, it's just... you know what? It's not a goodbye. It's, I'll see you after my funeral.
And it's toodle-pip from me.